Welcome to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. This is Eric Loomis, and we are here for our NFL midseason report with Scott Lemieux and Rob Farley. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, sir.
So when we, I think the only way to start this is, Rob wanted me to introduce our beverages. I am having a Tox Muscaria double dry hopped double IPA. So I don't know if it's like quadruple or what, which is, I think, out of New London, Connecticut. But this is like a special beer that is brewed for this 12% place in North Haven, Connecticut that I was at this weekend. And it is a very tasty beer. Rob, how many fingers of whiskey do you have? About 12?
Well, so, I think this is a 12-ounce glass. And when I started, it was pretty close to the top. So,
Would you say that's a fist of whiskey?
So this is Old Forester 100.
Yeah. What is it again?
Old Forester 100.
Oh, that's very quite fine. Dr. Mew, are you having any beverages this early on?
It's a little later, and it's a teaching day, so yes. So I'm having a Nothing Noble from the fine folks at Von Ebert Brewing in lovely downtown Portland. Not really something you can get very easily in Seattle, but it's a quality establishment. Good food too.
Good, yes.
Yeah, and if you're at Powell's, it's like kind of three blocks away on 13th. So, if you're in Portland, you probably know it already. It's not exactly obscure, but anyway, very, very, very nice. Double IPA, well balanced. Yeah, very nice. And in a Deschutes glass, so kind of continuing the Portland theme. Yeah, so it was in the lovely Rose City this week for a conference, which is always good. So.
Yes.
Tried to find one of the five remaining restaurants still open in the city, and
I was in lovely Bloomington, Indiana. But I'm not sure those two words have ever been connected before. But anyway, I was there for a conference this last weekend. So
I have never been to Bloomington. Yeah. Nor do I care.
What I will say is that the campus is, really has some interesting sort of modified faux brutalist architecture, right? There are really a lot of interesting buildings that are like, that really look like they were made by a really seriously talented Sylvia designer. So
that's great. I also like Indiana's license plate, the crossroads of America, because, it's the only thing the state has going for it is you have to travel through it to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
The Red Wings' last 5-minute theme song is Don't Stop Believin', which is literally a song about how everywhere in the world is better than Detroit.
Yeah.
So anyway, although we could talk about beer and Indiana all night, we are here talking about football and perhaps even the Colts. But I think we have to start by going back to our initial preseason podcast when Farley made this absurd, ridiculous claim that the Bengals would be good. And unlike his fantasy team, it's been proven correct. So
whatever, my fantasy team's 6-4. Anyway. So the sad part of this is that, we're going to lose the blog. We're going to lose the podcast. I'm probably going to lose my house. They're probably going to come and repossess my children's braces because Lemieux cursed the Bengals by talking about how good they were in a post. And since then, not only have they not won any games, they have been resolutely terrible in every single one of their games. Right? They've just been awfully bad. And frankly, it's the curse of Lemieux. And I don't see any way that that's not actionable. We are going to get sued by the Bengals, by the city of Cincinnati, by Joe Burrow, by Joe Mixon, right? This is not going to be good, right? It's going to be terrible. I won't even have the shirt off my back when this is done.
Do we have to pay them in bad chili?
Bad chili on pasta.
Yeah.
To return to the serious question, they really did. They played the Packers, who obviously, even their losses in the first half of the season, looked good. They played the Packers tight all the way until the end, and that's a very good Packers team. It's, the one with the immunized Aaron Rodgers. They looked very good, and in the last 2 weeks, they've just been awful. I guess they had a bye week this week, but previously, they've taken a serious downturn. Now, fortunately for the division, there aren't really any other super good teams in that division. I believe the Browns just lost by like 43 points or something. So there are limited effective teams in this division, but we'll see.
Why don't we talk about the Browns? I think that's one of the stories that's really not shocking, I don't think, because it wasn't like they were locked to be a good team. But But I think a lot of people felt they were really going to take a step up. Instead, they've taken a step back. You know, I'll avoid any comparisons to the city of Cleveland for the time being, but they certainly have been.
Lord can't make you burn.
And I mean, like, Baker Mayfield just may not be a good quarterback, but I'm just wondering what you guys think about the Browns.
I mean, yeah, Baker just seems like that. You know, if the Browns are smart, they will walk away after year five. Like, he's the classic quarterback who's like, fine. You know, on his rookie deal. And it should be said that, like, even though the injury isn't to his throwing shoulder, like, that's still pretty serious. You know, so I think he's a, when healthy, he's a decent middle of the road quarterback. You know, but he's not healthy enough. But certainly, you know, the idea that you're going to pay him like Kirk Cousins money, that's just insane. Like, that's just, he's not, you know, I think it's pretty clear now that he's not a kind of top 10, or he's not going to be consistently like a top 10 elite quarterback. You know, but yeah, I mean, they've certainly shown flat. I mean, again, like so many teams this year, they've been very inconsistent. What disturbed me yesterday was not so much losing as just getting just absolutely torched. Because the defense had actually been pretty good a lot of the year, and getting lit up by the Patriots that badly is pretty. And by the way, the I see the Patriots have now snuck in. They're now the eighth team in DVOA. So goody,
especially yeah, for that wasn't really expected.
Yeah, no.
Well, I would also note that, I mean, you know, we can kind of move into talking about the AFC generally, but I think one of the stories for the first half, or slightly more than that, of the season is the you know, for all of the teams, I think, in the AFC that seemed before the season to be real competitors for the title, you know, like literally none of them are looked particularly good, at least not consistently good.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills, you know, it's like you can at least see the Jaguars game as sort of an aberration. Like, they've generally taken care of the other bad teams. Like, they've played well. You know, obviously the win in Kansas City looks less impressive now than it did then. But, you know, still, there's like, you know, like, I guess the thing about the Jacksonville game is, like, if they go to Jacksonville, lose because Trevor Lawrence has his coming out party, you know, I don't necessarily see that as a big deal. Like, that can happen. Like, to lose 9-6, you know, is that's kind of a different story. You know, to a team that, by the way, whose defense was decimated by Geno Smith just 1 week earlier, that's not great. You know, and in general, you know, and again, it's just, it's so hard because everything about Josh Allen's career is so unprecedented that, you know, it's very, you know, sort of hard to evaluate that. But I'm actually interested to see where.
I mean, another one of these teams, not to step on your thing, Scott, but another one of these teams is the Ravens, right? I mean, the Ravens, will combine a lot of excellent looking weeks with losing to the Bengals at home by 24 and losing to the Dolphins by 12, right? And that's just, it's just inexplicable, that kind of, and that's all of them pretty much, right? From the Chiefs to the Chargers to the Ravens to the Bills, they all have these completely inexplicable losses. I mean, your exception here might be the Titans, but you know, the Titans, there now is this reason to be really suspicious about what they're going to be able to manage as well. So.
Yeah, so yeah, somehow I might have almost thought the Titans could potentially be the favorites before, you know, all of their good players got hurt. Although they beating the Saints with Trevor Siemian as quarterback, admittedly, is not beating like the 2014 era Saints. But nonetheless, I mean, that was a big win for them given all the injuries that they have.
Yeah, but it's still on the one hand, like, you know, again, they keep winning these games, but, you know, they, you know, beat Trevor Siemian because, like, the other team's kicker couldn't make extra points. You know, it doesn't really seem like a real sustainable, you know, formula coming forward. Here's a question for you. Who do you think has a higher DVOA right now, Josh Allen or Mac Jones?
Well, I'm guessing you wouldn't be asking if it wasn't Mac Jones.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I mean, isn't that the sneaky team right now is the goddamn Patriots? Yeah.
And I should say, Allen does have a slightly better one, but he ranks 18th and Jones ranks 20th. So it's frighteningly close for, and that's, you know, I would say that, and that's the thing about the Patriots, that it seems sustainable because, like, Jones has been fine, but I think that was sort of what he was seen as. It's kind of like a high floor prospect who can, like, hit the throws if he has them, you know? So it doesn't seem like he's basically been middle of the pack. It's just, you know, that Josh Allen is supposed to be better than that. You know, and he hasn't been consistently. But having said that, it's still not really clear, you know. But I mean, yeah, the Patriots are, and of course, as usual, they have a tie. And they've played the Jets twice, but I think they still have the fucking Jaguars. Like, they still, like, you know, it's just, it's, they have lots of winnable games in that schedule. You know, so yeah, I mean, it's sneakily, like, they could be the most consistent, you know.
Well, it's interesting here that while it's hard to identify any really good teams in the AFC, there sure are some terrible teams, right? Ugh. You know, the Jets, the Texans, and the Jags are all competing for this futility. Although I guess the Jags have been a little bit better as of late.
The Titans.
Are you saying that tanking philosophy is not gold? Just because
don't be absurd.
The tech bros at McKinsey seem to think so.
By the way, you know who has been a lot worse than Mac Jones is Trevor Lawrence. And like, I don't think Lawrence being bad this year says a lot about whether he could be a really good quarterback going forward. But I do think it raises questions about whether he's the, you know, absolutely indispensable, you know, prospect worth completely raising, you know, every good player in your team for. You know, like, it does seem in modern football, like, a genuine superstar should probably show a little more than this. In his first year,
there's been enough. I mean, you know, just looking at, say, Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow, you know, clearly a rookie quarterback in this league can now step into a situation and be pretty good, if inconsistent, you know, as both of them can be still, but still pretty good. And Lawrence has been pretty terrible. Obviously, the choice of Urban Meyer as head coach has been, you know, and he makes Spurrier and Chip Kelly look like brilliant moves from the college game. I mean, he's like Petrino bad.
Well, I'm looking forward to eating at the Urban Chop House in Bellevue, I have to say, once Urban signs a 5-year contract to coach the Huskies starting next year. Should be exciting. And then, of course, my position will be eliminated to pay the salary, so it should be good.
Of course, as it should be.
So Urban does not seem like a Pacific Northwest guy to me. And nor does UW seem like the kind of school that would pay his salary, but
what kind of region does Urban Meyer seem like that type of guy?
Columbus.
He seems like a genuinely horrible person, which I don't know. I mean, we tried to talk about Indiana earlier, so maybe.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Well, maybe you could build on some of that success in Kansas, you know?
It takes a lot to beat a Steve Sarkisian team. So Urban's ready to step up for that. But
yeah, as you said earlier, Sark is the scary UW candidate possibly. That's the nightmare.
Yes. But I mean, you know, anyway, but I have right now, admittedly, you know, football reporting tends to be very driven by the contemporary narrative, right? And the Jaguars have been bad, but so has Clemson. Right. Although they are 7-3, I think now, but it's a shitty 7-3 right there. You know, the ACC is bad. They've lost any decent team they played and they haven't looked good in the games that they've won. And, you know, there has been a lot of talk that Dabo, you know, for all of his personal touch with Jesus Christ, has not really gotten good offensive schemes from Jesus. And that, you know, the program is stale. The offense is stale. And without Lawrence and, the great Travis Etienne and the offensive line that was so good, that the team just isn't really very good. And so, you know, there's been at least some speculation that Lawrence actually was brought into the NFL despite his talent with a pretty poor preparation because the scheme had become so vanilla. And then, you know, he enters into a bad team with a horrible coach, and it's just a kind of worst case scenario, at least unless you play for the Jets. But
yeah, that's right. And again, I'm not down on Lawrence's long term. Like, I think it'll be fine. You have to wonder if he's like the sort of transcendent superstar that he was. I'm not saying that can happen, but I think
the last time there was a quarterback that seemed so golden from the moment he stepped on a college campus was Andrew Luck. And like Luck was ruined by the Colts' refusal to draft offensive linemen and his own being like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to get sacked 87 times this year. I'm going to go on and like live my life without CTE. But he was a genuinely great quarterback when he could stand up.
Lawrence, but that's the whole problem with tanking,
hasn't been
right?
Anything out of Lawrence.
The thing about like tanking is that you're adding a quarterback to a team that doesn't have good players. Like that's the whole, you know, so it's like Luck was about the best case scenario, but he still, that team never won anything. And the best quarterback in that class was drafted after a punter, you know? So it's weird that like, if Luck is your best argument for tanking, it's still not a very good argument, even though like he turned out to be very, very good, because that's the, you know, the problem is that pretty much by definition, if you tank, you're putting your quarterback into a really bad situation. And in the old days, you could let your quarterback mature. But now if you don't win with a quarterback within a 4-year ratio or a 4-year window, you know, you're going to have to pay an enormous amount of money in ways that are still going to make it hard to build a team, as obviously Seahawks fans well know. So, you know, it's a real, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that tanking is particularly a bad strategy in the NFL.
Well, and the other piece of that, I think, that is really important, because it's amazing to me. I mean, it's not really amazing, because I just feel like our, you know, management class is full of morons. But so, you know, it fits that general attitude that I have. But like, one can argue for, like, at least with the Sixers, when they went all in for tanking, like, basketball is a sport where you get one to two amazing players and you are going to be a very competitive team. Football is not that way. Baseball is not that way. And so this kind of tanking, especially, I mean, this is getting off topic, but was, I think, a record number of teams losing 100 games in Major League Baseball. Like, how is this supposed to actually build a team when you know, your good players walk into a situation and everybody around them is terrible? And it's one thing in baseball, right, which is bad enough. But in football, you're investing millions of dollars into this person. You're going to play immediately, and your offensive line is trash, and he's going to get killed out there, and he's never going to develop. How is this still something that is still so universally believed in
by
half the teams in the league?
And football is also a little bit different than both basketball and baseball in that, I mean, athletes do emerge more fully formed in both basketball and baseball than they do in football, right? I mean, generally speaking, especially for a complex position like quarterback, but also for offensive line, right? There's a lot of development that players have to go through when they reach the pro level, right? They I mean, and that also happens in basketball, but it's also the case that in basketball, like, truly elite talents dominate in their rookie year, right? And that's just not the case in football, because your body takes a little bit. A 22-year-old's body is not the ideal body for football. That usually it's like 2 or 3 years older as they add a little bit more matter, a little bit more weight, a little bit more muscle. but that requires a really good organization, and that requires, a player who is in a situation where they're not getting severely injured because they're being asked to do too much on the field. And that especially, I think, comes through. I'll be really interested. I don't know. I haven't followed closely enough who the golden boys for this year are supposed to be in terms of, because there's a draft for quarterbacks and there's a draft for everyone else.
Yeah,
right?
But that is the story, is that for all the discussion of tanking, like, by all accounts, this year's quarterback class is terrible. Right? There's nobody, not only at the Luck level or the Lawrence level, like, there's nobody at what the Herbert level was. I mean, there's like people that, you know, on big boards come in at 15th or 20th. You know, there's Matt Corral, there's the quarterback at Ole Miss, I guess. You know, like, everybody's talking about Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma, then he lost his freaking job at Oklahoma. I mean, there is nobody. So if you're the Lions, you know, Jared Goff, obviously a disaster. Who are you going to draft? And the answer is nobody, right? They you're going to draft somebody who's bad, or you're going to be the smart play and lose for another year and draft players who are actually good. But of course, coaches can't last long enough to go 4 or 5 years being bad. And so, you know, that's the other piece in a quarterback heavy league. What happens if you tank and then there's no good quarterbacks?
Yeah. Although at least the Lions seem to be, they're in a decent position, and they're not trying to lose, you know? So like, it's, you know, they at least, like, they seem like they actually like seem to like the coach, you know, like they aren't developing a losing culture. Like, I don't think, and I also think they could get away without drafting. Like, to me, if they don't draft a quarterback with a top pick, like, I think that'll be fine. I actually think that, you know, that it's a little different, but just rebuilding and being bad and just setting out to legitimately be as non-competitive as possible. I'm like, there's a fine distinction, but I think the Tigers are on the right, you know, the Lions are on the right side of the line, but they're not, like, they're actually committed in these games. They're trying trick play, you know, they're not just, you know, it's just not.
They're trying so hard. I mean, that's really the sad thing about them. I've seen the end of several Lions games this year. They really are trying so hard to not lose, and they succeeded. Let us raise a toast to the fact that the Lions, for the first time in what, you know, a very long time, succeeded in not losing this last week.
Yes.
To the tie. Yeah.
To the tie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say too much about the Steelers with Roethlisberger out, except to say that Roethlisberger isn't really that great anymore. But the Steelers do not exactly look like a dominant team either. I mean, again, the AFC North, it's like the whole AFC. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah, and you still think, I think the Ravens are still like the best of those. Again, but as you say, and any team that loses to the Dolphins, you know, that makes you nervous. But certainly, this loss. I mean, the Steelers are just they still have a really good defense, and they still have enough of a coaching infrastructure that they'll win winnable games. But Roethlisberger can't play anymore, and their backup is a substantial downgrade on like the end of Ben Roethlisberger, and that's a real like the game that like Goff and Rudolph. I mean, they had something like in five quarters they had like 150 net yards of passing or something between. It's just ridiculous. So Goff didn't throw an interception and was still horrible.
So, I mean, we should probably move on to the NFC here at some point.
Can we pause for a second? Because I want to go back and think about the AFC West.
I was going to say we should talk about the AFC West.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, this is a weird division, especially given like how I was ready to write the Broncos off, and then they beat the Cowboys, 30-0 or something along those lines?
Yeah.
Which incidentally was right after I dropped their defense in fantasy football. So assholes. But they're one game out of first place. They're in last place, one game out of first place, because the Chiefs are 6-4 and the Broncos are 5-5.
But who Broncos got trucked by the Eagles yesterday?
No. They crushed the Cowboys and they get thumped by the Eagles, right? The Chargers and the Raiders are in between the Chiefs and the Broncos.
Well, I think that the question is, I mean, the first question about that division is what's up with the Chiefs, right? I mean, that there's all this discussion, and I don't know, Scott, you seem to push back on this a little bit in your NFL blog post this week, or at least, in the who you link to. There's all this conversation that like Mahomes has been solved by the two high safeties or whatever.
Right.
And I don't know if there's truth to that or not, but whatever's going on, minus last night, where they looked like a great, great team again, they have been not good. And so I just wondering, like, what do we think is happening with Kansas City? Is it Andy Reid's getting too many cheeseburgers? I mean, what's up?
I mean, I think Tanir's point is that like the two high safety thing was effective, but it was effective because like Kelce wasn't playing well and the team had no running game. Like, it's not like Andy Reid doesn't know how to like deal with like two guys playing back. It's just that like they just didn't have that, they weren't executing, and like Mahomes, his short game seemed to be off. Kelce finally played well, but Kelce had really had kind of a rough 6 weeks. They have lost some depth too. I mean, that's one, again, the cap era. Not like Sammy Watkins is great, but it's sort of those, like, no one of the depth guys you lose is that important, but like you use enough of them, and you can't really, like, one of your stars goes into a slump, it's a real problem.
Chad Curtis of wide receivers, right? I mean, he's just like that guy who you add to your roster because you absolutely need to fill a spot. He's never going to be good, right? I've dealt with him like that for like 5 years.
Yeah. And congratulations to the old school Bills actually trading up an extra first rounder to get him in a draft that also had like, who was like OBJ and like several other great receivers like went right after him. It's like a classic, but anyway, yeah. I mean, I think, I mean, they can still be pretty terrifying, but like, the defense is legitimately bad. And, yesterday, I mean, I am always a skeptic about the Raiders until they win anything. And their season is pretty much taking the same trajectory that their season is taking the Derek Carr era. So it's one encouraging sign, but I would like to see, I'm going to need to see more than that. pronounce them fully back.
I mean, I guess if we're thinking about AFC projections right now, I don't know that I would deviate very much from the projections I made at the beginning of the season, because you have every seemingly dominant team taking a step back, but then nobody really taking a giant step forward. So it's just a lot of 6-4 teams. And okay, I guess you have to really, at least for me, have to believe that the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Ravens are going to step this up and maybe, you know, maybe the number one seed is only a 12-4 or 11-5 team, but that those teams will in the end probably remain the dominant teams, but I or the teams that are more likely to advance to the conference finals. But I don't know how you gentlemen feel.
Yeah, I will say this. I think in this conference, the number one seed is going to be huge. Like, not having to play that third game is getting, you know, given how tightly bunched these teams are, not having to play the third game and getting both games at home, I think that's going to be a big deal. So I think the two games between the Bills and Patriots are actually going to be hugely significant, because I think if Buffalo could get the number one seed, I think it's going to be very hard to come into Buffalo and beat them in the playoffs. You know, even if Allen is only okay, but you know, if you have to, if the Bills have to go into Foxborough, or Arrowhead, you know, I think that's a somewhat, and I know they've won in Arrowhead once this year, but you know, presumably the Chiefs might be in better shape come playoff time. So yeah, it's, to me, I think seeding is going to mean a lot, because there's not a lot, you know, the teams are all like talented, but erratic. So I really think that like not having to play that extra game is going to be a really, really big deal. Home advantage is tougher. Well, seems to have attenuated a bit in the NFL, but I still think in the playoffs, given the weather, I think that could be significant. So it's going to be, if you held a gun to my head, I would still probably say Buffalo is the most likely team to come out, but you know, it's pretty marginal. Like you wouldn't be surprised to see any of those top five teams get out. You know, I think between Baltimore, the Chiefs, and then, you know, I think you have to put the Patriots in that top five, don't you?
I think you have to put the Patriots in that top five.
And in the end, the Titans right now have a game and a half lead for the number one spot over the Bills and Ravens, right? They're 8-2. Right. Bills and Ravens.
That's their best chance. They get Henry back for the playoffs and they have a bye. I mean, and that's really their best shot. Because, you know, I think like they actually lost DVOA yesterday. for that win in New Orleans. So I think that like they're just, you know, they're what they've always been. They're like a pretty good team that seems well coached. But again, that's, you know, if they don't have to like get beat up for that extra week, they get Henry back, you know.
I mean, so they still have two games against the Texans. They have the Jags, they have the 49ers and the Dolphins. Right. So they play the 49ers, the Dolphins, the Texans twice, and the Jags. And the quote unquote good teams they play are the Steelers and the Patriots.
So,
I mean, they have to be the odds on favorite, right? I mean, how could you not make them the odds on favorite?
It's a great point. Yeah.
Let me read out to you in terms of point differential at this time the top five teams in the AFC. Okay. Number one is the Bills by a lot.
That's right.
Yeah. Number two, and still by a lot, is the Patriots, who are plus 98. Number three is the Titans at plus 46. Number four, the Colts, who we have not even mentioned, who are 5-5 at plus 38. Wow. And number six, the Bengals at plus 33. And so this is just a schizoid conference.
No Baltimore.
No. Wow. No Baltimore. Baltimore is only plus 14. Both the Chargers and the Steelers have negative point differentials. Meanwhile, the Broncos are plus 17.
Yeah, the Broncos have a better than the Ravens.
Yeah, the Broncos are better than the Ravens.
Wow.
So it's this is past halfway through this season. I mean, this is after week 10. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. Nobody seems to know what's going on here.
Yeah, it's really weird. And definitely there's been I think a bit of a return to earth from Herbert isn't all that surprising. I mean, I think there are going to be some growing pains, but you know, in the end, I still think they'll be fine. I will say this: the playoffs in the AFC this year should be absolutely wild. there's some really, really good games. And I do think, again, these games don't such a good matter. By the way, it is like when I linked to that article pointing out that Cal Shanahan has a substantially worse coaching record than Norv Turner. And of course, the 49ers are up 14-0. So,
We are recording this in the middle of the Rams Niners games. And I think that, as we all thought, you know, Matthew Stafford was going to be a disaster in LA and they would be a terrible team. And look, I mean, they're 7-2. the NFC has been almost as interesting as the AFC, right? First of all, I think you can make a pretty, you could make the argument that the five best teams in football are in the NFC.
Between
the Cowboys, Packers, Bucks, Cardinals, and Rams. And that's quite interesting.
And it didn't seem like I thought. No, go ahead, Rob.
I'll go ahead and start with taking an L on the Cowboys. I mean, I did say something accurate, which is that if Dak isn't, going to be very good, then they're going to be terrible. And that's not wrong, because of course Dak has not been terrible, and so they've been very good.
Well,
so.
also they've had the massive defensive improvements.
Right.
You know, I mean, I hate the Cowboys, as much as I hate the Yankees, but it's hard to argue with the results right now. I mean, they've been a very, very, very good football team.
Yeah, that was one thing I was right about. And I guess my theory being that, Dak is good if he's healthy. The weapons are very impressive, between Lamb and Cooper. Not only a lot of good wideouts, but wideouts who do different things, which I think makes it harder to game plan against them. Dan Quinn is another quintessential, the fact that he's not a good head coach doesn't mean he's not a very good coordinator. And that's one thing Dallas really needed, was somebody from outside the organization to whip that defense into shape. And Quinn seems to have done that. So, that's actually doesn't surprise me. Although what I was wrong about in the East is that I definitely did not anticipate the Eagles being this competitive. Part of the reason I thought Dallas is an easy pick is I just thought the other three teams would be hideous. And actually the Eagles have been pretty competitive, and Hurts has kind of gone from a guy who just puts up decent fantasy numbers to a guy who actually has been not bad. I wouldn't say good, but certainly better than as good as Daniel Jones, let's say.
He's been pretty consistent. Been pretty inconsistent.
Yeah.
The thing about the Eagles is that they're 4-2 on the road and 0-4 at home.
Philadelphia kind of makes sense.
For that matter, the Niners are 3-1 on the road and 0-4 at home. So there's a lot of nonsense. Dick Allen. I mean, admittedly, if I had to commute to Santa Clara, I'd probably want to lose at home too.
My point about Stafford is that I thought he would be. He was clearly going to be an upgrade over Goff, which in a sense for the Rams is all that matters. I'm still not convinced that he's a truly great quarterback, but the way to look at it is that if McVay could get decent results out of Jared Goff, he should be able to get, very good results out of Stafford, which I think is what happened. And I will say this, that the Rams are, if you're going to go in, go all in, they are doing it right. That you can't do that half-ass. And what's the big difference in the AFC West right now is that, the Rams trade 2 first round picks for Jalen Ramsey. The Seahawks play 2 first round picks for the world's smallest outside lineman. That's really the, so at least, obviously it's all going to fall apart in 3 years, but if you're going to load up your chips. And obviously Von Miller helps with that too.
OBJ, right, I'm very skeptical about Odell Beckham at this point, but might as well. I mean, this is what they're, especially Robert Woods out now. I mean, you might as well.
Right.
So,
Make of the Cardinals?
I saw a pretty good conversation about it, which was, and OBJ is not Randy Moss, right? But remember, people did decide that Moss was done when he was with the Raiders, right? And there is nothing about Cleveland that sort of works against the conclusion that, it's just not that great of a passing game in the end, and they just couldn't figure out something to do with it. So, who knows? I don't think you can integrate him in because, Stafford knows what he's doing. He's an old guy. He knows what he's doing. He has Cooper Kupp, who's the best receiver in the, the best sort of pound for pound possession receiver in the game. I'm not sure that OBJ is really going to have all that much to do, but maybe it's a better situation for him in LA.
Yeah. And with the Woods injury, it's not just pure luxury either. That's actually a pretty big loss. They do need that offense does need some deep threats to work. So, it's not it's all gravy, right? It's no, there's no downside to it. And, and it's all Beckham isn't an Antonio Brown either. He's a bit of a, I don't think he's a bad person or anything. He's fine. So it's a good gamble. Do we think that, I'm inclined to think the Rams are still the best team in the division, but what do we think about Arizona?
I mean, if you look at their schedule, they had right at this moment, they're 8-2, but they had a really bad loss yesterday, Carolina at home, but I mean, if you look at the rest of their of what they've done, I mean, they've played a reasonably tough schedule. The only really crappy teams that they've played are Jacksonville and Houston. And so, you know, their wins are at Tennessee, Minnesota. They've won at the Rams. They've won at Cleveland. They've won at San Francisco. Yeah, they had a close loss to the Packers. All right. But, I mean, and then going forward, I mean, the next two games are because the Seahawks and the Bears. And they have
the
Lions.
And the game they lost yesterday was Cole McCoy. So you can't really count that
either. Yeah. So, I mean, I think – I mean, I remember when we had our conversation at the beginning of the season – it was like, I guess Arizona might be fourth, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were first. And so I'm not surprised. I think they're a really good team.
No. But let the record reflect, I did pick the Seahawks to win the division. So I'm taking the fat L on that one. You know, it's like, the Wilson injury does not. But it's pretty clear this team was not destined to win the division even before.
No, I mean, look, they've been holding this team together with string for 3 or 4 years. You know, and it's probably time for Pete Carroll to move on. I mean, yesterday's performance. Yeah, sure. You know, Russell Wilson was, you know, his fingers clearly on 100%, whatever he has to say. But the fact that Carroll is going and, you know, complaining about the refs, like, dude, you got some bigger problems like you.
Yeah. That was a bad spot. It was also like 5 minutes into the first quarter. You know, like, yeah, it doesn't really explain why he scored 0 points the whole game.
Yeah.
And also, it also reflects, like, if Wilson couldn't grip the ball, that actually reflects on the head coach. Like, you know, like, if the guy can't throw, he shouldn't be in the lineup, which seems pretty clear. Like, basically all of the accounts after that surgery suggested, like, an absolute minimum of 4 weeks rehab and more like 6 to 8. And it was clear, like, I've never seen him, you know, and he's never had like the softest touch on short throws, but like his long throws were just like, you know, it was just like, it's, right. You know, look at like Jared Goff is throwing them.
I mean, terrible. That's his calling card, is his beautiful arching long throws. And like,
yeah,
they were terrible. I mean, you know, there was the couple that were picked, but there was a whole bunch more that could have been picked.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He was just, he was bad. He was clearly not ready to be back.
Yeah, and that's it. And, you know, what's really scary is, like, I'm trying to figure out who, because, you know, the Packers are still pretty terrifying, and that's certainly a team.
Yes and no, though. So let me point, going back to point differential.
Ah.
And this is only, the Packers have played 10 games. They're 8-2. Their point differential is plus 36.
Yeah, that blowout to the Saints in week one hurts.
The Saints, it should be said, are plus 44 at a 5-4 record. Now, again, okay, you know, there's that one game and it skews it some. And I'm not really saying the Saints are that good, but the Packers, look, you know, I don't know if the Rodgers rate covers COVID or not, but the Packers are skating by with a lot of 3-point wins.
Well, the Packers,
worth, I mean, at least Packers noting this.
Yeah. The Packers are still going to, I mean, so they are now 3 full games in the lead in their division. It looks like it might be 3.5. So they're not going to lose this division, right?
No. Yeah, they're not.
They're also pretty clearly going to get a bye. So, I mean, I think we do need to talk about Rodgers. So, I mean, here's my rant on Rodgers, right? I mean, I've watched him more this year than because he is actually – straightforwardly, because he's my quarterback in both fantasy leagues. And he's just an asshole, right? He's just an asshole on the field, right? And he yells at the refs, and I've watched one where he's like yelling at a ref as he's being tackled about some rule violation, right? And so there is no doubt in my mind that this man was sitting at home cheering hard for Jordan Love to fail. Right. There's no question that he wanted the Packers to lose, and to lose badly in the week that he was out. And he cost the team a game. Right. I mean, frankly, like, his idiocy cost the Packers a game. It's probably not going to matter, because they're probably still going to have home field advantage, at least for the first round. But
remember, there's only one bye. It could definitely cost them the number one seed, which is a pretty big deal.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. 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 So, yeah, it could. But I mean, yeah, it's just reprehensible behavior. Right. I mean, in terms of a professional football player.
And to some extent, I mean, other than him being a gigantic douche, which is like, you know, I'm almost glad, because the story of, like, oh, Aaron Rodgers is so weird and unusual for a football player. He's so interesting. It's like, he's just another dumb jock. Like he there's nothing interesting about this man at all, you know? And, you know, so I'm kind of enjoying that bubble being blown up, but I think that somewhat more disturbingly, and to kind of go to Rob's point here, is that, you know, when the Packers drafted Rodgers, Brett Favre was like a massive asshole, just terrible person. And he got a lot of criticism for that and treating Rodgers like crap. And Rodgers has learned absolutely nothing, right? He's doing the exact same thing to Jordan Love. And, you know, I don't, the ego it takes to be a first rate NFL quarterback, I guess, isn't something I can relate to, but you know, he's, as you put it, Rob, he's just a reprehensible human being. And I am enjoying the comeuppance that no one will ever think about him now without thinking he's a lying piece of shit. So.
Yeah. And not every top quarterback, like, you know, if you look at, you know, like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Russell Wilson and Pat Mahomes, like they're not constantly screaming at their teammates on the sidelines and like constantly undermining their coaches. And, you know, and many of those, you know, not Brady, but several of these quarterbacks have had much more reason to complain about their coaches. You know, and again, you know, Mike McCarthy, I like making fun of him as much as the next guy, but he's a competent coach. Like, you know, the Cowboys are.
I've been thinking about this, right? What are some good sort of mentoring stories of NFL quarterbacks? It's an extremely difficult thing, right? Because there's only one quarterback that gets to play. And so what good stories are there from NFL history of, you know, quarterbacks who, you know, are high quality, but who are also regarded as good mentors for the next one up?
Well, there's no one least Joe Montana.
Yeah, no, Montana and Young hated each other, right? And so, yeah.
That's because often when, you know, whenever a team like pays $3 million to bring in Babe Bowles or something, so he's like, well, he'll mentor the young quarterbacks. But like, I never like I think they used to say that about Ryan Fitzpatrick, who like bitches and pisses and moans anytime he loses a job. You know, so there's really not, you know, there must be. I would say, I think Alex Smith, is that fair to say? Like, I think he did a pretty good job with Mahomes, you know, and I don't think Reed would have kept them if he doesn't. That could be an exception.
Well, I think
Mahomes speaks well of Smith.
And Kurt Warner.
Yeah. Excellent example with Eli. That was really classy. Because Warner actually was playing pretty well that year. And Eli was not ready, but he didn't complain. I would say that's a fair. Yeah, that's actually a good example.
And I don't really, I mean, maybe too long ago, but I don't remember Drew Bledsoe really being a huge jerk toward Brady.
That's an interesting question. I don't remember. That's an interesting question.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, Brady himself definitely was not a great mentor to Garoppolo.
Right.
I'm sure. But I think it's almost like, you know, I guess there's a certain level of greatness where I'm not sure that's really realistic. And, you know, Brady can certainly still play. So, but yeah, no, it's certainly that's the Warner Smith, I think, is the exception to the rule. You know, I think that for the most part, it tends to end badly. But it's not, you know, so much like, you know, I understand the thing about Love in that, you know, it was a little weird to draft a quarterback in the first round. Plus, like, it never, like, nothing in Love's record suggested that he was worthy of that pick. And his performance in that game certainly did not suggest that the Packers had found uncovered something that, like, no other scout or, you know, statistic could reveal. Like, he looked hideously bad. You know, I can sort of forgive him for that. But just with Rodgers, he's just complaining about something all the time. Like, the man never stops whining ever. You know, and again, he's still a great player, but I'm about to say something. I understand the magnitude. I would say if the Packers and Cowboys play in the playoffs this year, I am shooting for the Cowboys or rooting for the Cowboys. And no, I will not even have any hesitation about that. It does not make me feel good, but I'm just telling you that,
that's a hard choice, but I gotta say,
that's difficult.
I can't imagine rooting for the Cowboys under any circumstances, but then I think about Aaron Rodgers. So,
Yeah, and I actually like Dak. I've done nothing against most of the Cowboys players.
No, it's just Jerry Jones, really, and their fans.
Yeah. It's really just him. Yeah.
I think I've probably told the story before, but when I lived in Texas and I was driving up to Dallas in April, and I was listening to sports radio as I got in toward the city, And, you know, like the Rangers were a good team then. You know, the Mavericks still had Dirk. The Stars were, you know, in the playoffs. And what was the conversation on sports radio? It was whether Jerry Jones should have fired Tom Landry 20 years earlier. So, you know, it's just Cowboys fans are so, or so it's like if you combine Ohio State fans with, like, I don't know, Yankees fans, you get Cowboys fans. It's the worst possible combo, plus the whole Texas thing. So it's really hard, but yeah, I don't know. Like, I think I would be better with, given that I like Dak fine and the Cowboys have done a good job. And also it would be amusing in some ways to see Mike McCarthy beat the Packers.
Payback time. Although, yeah, that is going to be the one problem. You know, that, you know, Mike McCarthy going in a playoff game is never a that's scary, but hopefully somebody will not. But, you know, I do think, and yeah, again, the Packers are good, but they still have all the vulnerabilities that, you know, like they, you know, and certainly yesterday's game was very winnable for the Seahawks. Like in the third quarter, I'm still preparing my, like, I guess the Packers weren't immunized against losing tweets. Like, you know, they really let the Seahawks hang around in that game forever. You know, and of course, like, I can't, you know, because I have Aaron Jones, but my opponent had that asshole backup. So, like, I can't even enjoy the Packers inevitably running up the, like, it's just like the worst of all worlds. But yeah, I mean, it, you know, it wasn't like, that was not an impressive performance, you know, given that the Seahawks were essentially starting like Geno Smith.
I don't think the Packers have had impressive performances. I mean, they are winning games and that's what matters, yeah. But you know, they're 8-2 plus with a plus 36 scoring differential, which means that they're winning their average game by less than a touchdown. Yeah. So,
yeah,
you know,
and you can say that the Saints blow is an average, but also like getting blown up by the Saints is pretty disturbing. It's not the Drew Brees, you know, that's being blown up by Jameis Winston with no receivers. Like, that's not great, actually.
Right. You know, I mean,
like, the Saints aren't blowing at anybody else.
Right. I mean, they played well, but they beat the 49ers by two. They beat the Bengals by three. They beat the right. Cardinals, which is a great win, but by three. I mean, they have not, they're a pretty good team, but I don't think this is a dominant team. And I think that people who are going all on the Packers probably are going to find themselves falling short. Now, admittedly, the late season Packers schedule still includes, the Bears, the Lions, and they have two games against the Vikings, and they have the Browns at home. So they probably are going to do pretty well overall, but I would not bet on this as a Super Bowl team by any means.
That is a low-key, terrible division.
Ugh. Yeah, so how do we interpret the Bucks, right? Because there are a lot of ways in which the Bucks are having last year and this year, right? In which they have, you know, absolute dominating performances with, like, really curious, how the heck did they, how were they even, like, how did they even leave the other team in this game, and then they lose the game? So, you know, it's not, I don't know, what do you guys think about how the Bucks, because I stand by my Bay versus the Bay for the NFC Championship at this point, but what do you guys think of the Bucks?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I don't like two bad performances in a row. And I think that the other thing too is that we do forget is that Brady's amazing for a 44-year-old quarterback, but he's still, like, it's pretty clear that he needs to have a lot of weapons now. You know, in the way that wasn't true early in his career. You know, like, he was clearly declining when the Patriots lost. And it's pretty clear that in particular not having Gronkowski is a major problem. Like, you know, he really needs to have, like, it makes a huge difference to him having, like, fully healthy skill players in the way that it doesn't for, like, a Rodgers, for example. I'm a little curious, like, the defense should be better, but that also was very volatile year to year. And last year they were also incredibly healthy. And that was something that was going to regress. And I think like Veda got hurt last night, which really hurts their run game, you know? So I do think that, you know, that the one thing with the Buccaneers is that, you know, they're still a very, very talented team, but they're also really old. And it's going to be really tough to get that through, you know, the extra game in the schedule this year. You know, that's going to be really hard to sort of get through. You know, and again, so much is going to come down to that one seed. And part of the problem is that it's going to be real hard for an AFC West team to get a number one seed. And we're already seeing this. I mean, it looks like San Francisco could beat the Rams. And would you even say it's that shocking an upset, really? I mean, you know, despite the problems the 49ers have, they're still a good team. They're playing at home. You know, the Cardinals are still going to be, but again, it's going to be really hard for the Cardinals to win enough games. So the thing about Green Bay is they just have like a cupcake schedule. So it's going to be, you know, if they get that first round bye, and I do think that's a problem for the Buccaneers. Like, it's going to be hard for them to like play three games this year. So, but you know, they're still awfully, but their upside is still awfully good. Like, it doesn't seem like Gronkowski, you know, they shouldn't be back for the playoffs, right? I mean, unless they get further injuries. So, you know, there's still not a team I would want to play. I think they're still really good, but I think you are seeing some of the downside there that, you know, but Brady's not just going to power through with like only having one of his two good players. Like, he needs everybody. And that's hard. You know, it's very hard to get through the NFL season with your full set of weapons healthy.
Their schedule's been a little front loaded too. I mean, they still have their last three games include two against the Panthers and then the Jets.
And they have
the Falcons and Giants as well. So they've got it pretty easy. Other than a game against the Bills, they have it pretty easy here going forward. So I suspect the Tampa will do well, but right. I mean, the Packers may, by I think many accounts, be not even close to really the best team in the NFC, but they certainly have the highest likelihood of having home field, which of course means Lambeau in January, which is a gigantic home field advantage, especially against a team like a Tampa or an LA or an Arizona who just don't play in those conditions.
Right. Yeah. And I'm looking at this here. I mean, I don't know. I don't like the Bucs schedule moving forward. I mean, you're right. They have the Jets and the Giants, which is great. But you know, I mean, they have the Bills, you know, okay. The Saints, I guess, are not much of a threat anymore, but,
the Saints are, you know, they're not an easy out. I don't really understand.
Well, I don't think the Panthers twice is an easy out either. They have Panthers twice in three games.
Especially since Darnold has been conveniently put on the IR.
I mean, I guess we'll see what Cam does, you know?
Yeah.
The astonishing return of Cam Newton.
Yeah.
The Panthers were 3-0 and then lost 5 out of 6. Barely beating the Falcons before beating Arizona yesterday. So, I mean, like, they've been pretty bad.
But, you know, they have a decent defense. You know, McCaffrey's healthy and, like, you know, Newton has got to be an upgrade over Darnold. it's like not to say that they're good, but I don't think that's not a game that you could just, like, write the win on the schedule. You know, like, especially, you know, like, that's a game you have to, like, it would not be shocking to see the Buccaneers split those two. And even the Giants aren't, you know, yeah, they're not good, but they're not a, you know, absolute pushover. You could see them losing at least one, you know. And again, like, they'll be fine, but just like the margin of error in terms of like getting home field is just really thin. And the Packers are now starting ahead of them and they have a weaker schedule going forward. And the Vikings are actually not a bad team, but it's just like, the worst decision I've ever made is having like three key Vikings on a fan. It's the worst, you know, it's like Mike Zimmer has a team under very strict orders not to try to get first downs if they have a lead of more than 10 points. Like, it's just the most, you know, like, it's just, you know, like, Zimmer has a lot in common with Pete Carroll. Like, he does a lot of things well, but he has just a horrible case of defensive coordinator brain. Like, just, you know, like, they're paying a quarterback $31 million. And again, he's not Russell Wilson. But on the other hand, the Vikings have a real defense, or the Seahawks don't. But they just don't, you know, they just want to, like, go up 10-0 and, like, not throw a forward pass for, like, the next 50 minutes. That's, you know, like, it's really torturous. But, you know, that they're not, like, any given week they could beat you. Like, they are a pretty solid team. But I just, you know, I do not see them beating Aaron Rodgers in the playoff game. I do not see that.
So, we've been talking for about an hour, so we should probably wrap it up. Yeah. I'm sure every LGM reader is deeply invested in each word of this conversation, but
worth every dime of your subscription, assholes.
Exactly. You don't like it? Pay us money not to do it. That's what I'm saying. Money not to do it. So, we'll probably do a playoff podcast here in 6 or 7, you know, 7 or 8 weeks. But for the record right now, who do you guys see as what is the championship game of the AFC and NFC? You don't have to pick a winner, Who do you see as the home team, and who's going to be playing them?
Rob, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. So in the AFC, I'm gonna stick with half of my prediction. No, you know what? I'm not going to stick with half my prediction. I'm going to say that the home team is going to be the Titans and the road team is going to be the Bills, which is an abdication of both, because I originally had it the Chiefs and the Chargers. So, but in the NFC, I'm gonna stick. It's going to be Green Bay and Lambeau in against Tampa Bay in January. We'll see if Tom Brady's 44-year-old bones will literally shatter when he gets tackled in negative 21 degree wind chill.
His woo-woo nutritionist will surely get in the way of that, but if he just doesn't eat any pasta, he'll be fine. I do have to say the real revelation of commercials in the NFL this year has been the Tom Brady Subway commercial. Right.
Oh, that was great.
You know, I mean, like turning the whole thing on its head, and like the least likely person to do it or to endorse it, I thought was pretty genius. But anyway, Scott,
the Belichick ones are pretty good too. It was kind of the campaign was pretty short lived, but actually, those are pretty entertaining. As for the Marshawn Lynch ones,
yeah.
Although the much better ones, Marshawn Lynch does just like local ads for like a plumbing company. Just tremendous. Like, I don't know how they can afford them, but it's like it's just grade A content.
Well, you know, Lynch always said that he lived off of his endorsements and put all of his salary into the bank. And so he may just be willing to do anything so he doesn't have to touch his capital. I mean, he's a smart dude.
Yeah.
I love Marshawn.
wait. Here's a side point. Is the Beast a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, boy, that's tough. He's right on the cusp. It's sort of like I'm inclined to say no, but on the other end of fucking Curtis Martin and like Jerome Bettis are Hall of Famers. Yeah. Like, you know, based on like the recent running back, like he's clearly better than like Sean Alexander. You know, like he's, you know, like Paul he's Lewis, like
those kinds.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I think, yeah, he's right on the cusp. He's right on like. You would like his career, like he's just, you know, you'd like his career to be a little longer or like one more great season. But he was really outstanding when he was good. You know, and what other Hall of Famers are there on the stage? So like Wilson's a Hall of Famer. Earl Thomas is a Hall of Famer. Wagner's a Hall of Famer. You know, should they have a fourth? Because that Lynch is the only other candidate.
Well, Sherman.
Like, oh, Sherman. Sorry. That's right. Yeah, but, I mean, so maybe you could say fourth
on that team. Yes.
Yeah.
For a team that won one Super Bowl, there could be a lot of Hall of Famers. But yeah, I think Wagner. True. I mean, Thomas will probably get in, but it's harder for safeties, and also the end was so divisive.
That's true.
Yeah. He was, you know, punching his own players in the face. Like,
that's actually true. It might be a while for him. Like to me, I think Thomas is a greater player than Sherman without even any question.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you're right. Corners have an easier time getting in, and the end was Thomas's. Wagner.
To me, it's possible that there's pushback against Russ for that matter. I mean, ultimately, the results are not always that great for all the hype. I mean, I think the one obvious first ballot Hall of Famer there is Wagner.
Yeah,
which is funny because he was always the quietest of all those people.
Right.
But
right.
I do think, but to go back to the point. I do think that Lynch probably sneaks in because of a dearth of running backs that are going to be coming up, and also the personality. And it was just funny because he was so anti-media early in his career, and now he's just like fun-loving guy. And I mean, people do respond to that. So I bet he sneaks in. But Scott, your predictions. Now I've given you enough time to think. Your predictions on the championship games. Sorry.
Yeah, by the way, as a political scientist, I like the fact that the Rams have a wide receiver named Skoranek. So I'm just going to have to come up with lots of like obscure jokes about like presidents for them. You know, and the answer, I'm going to stick with the, you know, should I stick with my original? Should I stick with Bills Chiefs? Despite the bye, I'm still not going to pick the Titans because I still, I don't think they're going to be favored in any,
if Derrick Henry comes back after that bye game, like completely fresh, right? I mean,
it's fair. It's very fair. I mean, I don't think it's a bad pick at all, but should I do it? Should I pick? I'm just going to say it. Because this
the stakes
be the
are
worst,
high here, Lemieux.
This could be the worst possible feeling for fans in Western New York, Bills Patriots.
Bill. Oh, the Patriots. Wow. Wow. Strong. That is as bold as Farley's Bengals selection at the beginning of the season. Although, to be fair, that's worked out fairly well. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I certainly like, but to me, there's just, you know, it's very tough. Like, I think the Ravens could, and I actually think, like, I think the Chiefs are still, like, you know, they can certainly get it together, you know, to sort of get there. It would not, you know, so I would see the, you know, I would see the kind of Ravens, Chiefs, you know, Titans, Patriots all in a pretty tight knot there. And so much is going to depend on matchups. But, you know, I just look at, like, the Patriots have a lousy schedule. They have really good coaching. They're consistent. So, you know, scarily, I think they have a chance to do it, but it would just be something about, like, don't you think, like, the Bills need to kill their fathers? Like, if they're going to go to the Super Bowl, like, don't think they need to, like, that could also actually be I could also see that being a divisional round matchup too, which would be really interesting. So it's kind of hard to make these picks without knowing what the seedings are, but just because it would be fun, let's say Bills Patriots. And then in the AFC, I'm going to say Packers just because I think they're probably going to have the number one seed. Say Packers, Rams.
Interesting. So
despite today, I'm not going to let today's egg in Santa Clara bother me.
So,
yeah, no. And we just saw a failed fake field goal here, which is always an exciting play.
I'm going to go a little contrary here, I think. I think that the number one seed in both conferences will be Tennessee and Green Bay, but I don't think either of them will make the conference finals. I'm going to go Chiefs Bills in the AFC still, because I just don't see teams I think are better. And in the NFC, I think I'm going to go Rams and Cowboys.
Ooh.
I thought about that part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I can see the Cowboys going into Lambeau and winning for sure. That's a good team.
I mean, the Cowboys are kind of well set up for going to Lambeau and winning because, having that kind of a running game is just not something that that everybody has. And, they can feed that and, feed Elliott and probably do pretty well there. So, you know, that's my call, though. Cowboys and Cowboys Rams.
Yeah. I mean, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you have to, you know, Mike McCarthy in a playoff game always has to scare you a little, but, you know, that's to be the strongest case of the Cowboys that they have a real diversity of defensive weapons, you know, that they're like, you know, they, not only do they have a running game, they can also like do lots of different things in the passing game, like Dak is mobile, and their defense is actually not bad under Quinn. So, you know, that's, you know, I think they're going to be a tough out. I would not at all so be surprised to see them in the conference final. I think that's an interesting pick.
So before we depart for this fine evening, are there any last thoughts here about fake field goals, the dominance of the 49ers tonight? Anything else you'd like to leave our listeners who all no doubt are still paying attention to every word?
Well, I mean, I think for all of us when I say go Ducks.
what about the Huskies?
Jimmy Lake, we hardly knew ye.
It's really actually kind of offensive that we don't have a Ducks Huskies podcast each year, right? That we should have that. I mean, Sideshow actually does have feelings about this kind of thing. I've heard his feelings before, so
it's true.
Yeah, I just don't care enough.
I feel like the Ducks side of this equation much, much more obnoxious. Very much.
Well, it's not a rivalry at this point. Like, you know, UW is going to have to be bet. You know, it'd be like having a Yankees Orioles podcast. Like, it's not like it's up getting worse. Maybe the Yankees. I don't know. Maybe you're like a Rays or like, I don't know. It's not really a rivalry until UW shows they can actually, like, you know, win something, but you could try to get Sideshow along. That could be fun. Or we could try to get Emily to arrange an interview with the, So Emily might know who the new Huskies coaching hire is for anybody else. So we'll try to get that inside information.
Breaking LGM announces Steve Sarkisian.
Must credit LGM.
It'll be good for the bars. And, you know, I got to say, like, that's, you know, we could probably use the help.
Okay, so we are reuniting for the playoffs and possibly for a college football playoff pod. We will see how things develop.
We may indeed. So I guess we will let you loyal listeners go enjoy your evening. And this has been Eric Loomis with Scott Lemieux and Rob Farley. Go Seahawks, I guess. Sort of.
No maybe. Point in tanking. Jets are.
If they do tank, it's not like they're going to draft well. They're going to draft another run stopper who can't stop the run. And
well, also the Jets have our number one pick, so it doesn't matter. We'll have to drop that run stopper with our high two. So might as well win out.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for indulging us this evening, and we'll talk to you soon. Good night, everyone.
Thank you again for listening to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. We would like to thank Elizabeth Nelson of The Paranoid Style for supplying the music necessary to make this podcast possible. You can find this track and the rest of The Paranoid Style's catalog anywhere you can find quality music. If you would like to support the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast or any other aspect of the Lawyers, Guns, and Money project, please visit us at www.patreon.com/lawyersgunsandmoney or donate through the PayPal link on the main website. Thank you again,